money goes in the name of women but is used by men.
Correct.
Because her life control is not in her hand. So I have been a regulator and I have seen this financial system build financial services does not include women.
I've actually become increasingly feeling that the world is sexist and no one benefits.
So women have a very granular understanding of money because they know how much is going to the dhobi versus how much is going to the EMI or insurance.
My home is one where my mother's income has historically been zero. But my mother's financial agency is very high.
Young men are going to have the same financial difficulties that women have always had.
Is this a North India, South India issue?
Very well done, guys.
good job.
I did not say that at all. And I really want to clarify that.
Hey guys, just shot a fantastic episode with Shinjini Kumar. And the one big takeaway for me was that when you build a career for 30 plus years, just the plurality of the career adds so much perspective and value. She started, as a journalist. Then she went to the Reserve Bank of India. And she was there in the early 90s to mid 90s where, India was liberalizing. She was in charge of FDI. So imagine, right place, right time, and in the heart of action. And then, of course, she, went to study in the US, came back, joined Bank of America. And then she was a consultant at PwC, set up their practice, was then CEO of the payments bank at Paytm. And then she kind of went back to the corporate career and in COVID became an entrepreneur at the age of maybe 45, 47 or so, right? Just a tremendously non-linear career, so diverse in her experiences. And it comes out, right? And plus, in addition to that, she is a woman in a space that is mostly dominated by men. She has come from Bihar, Hindi medium school, which kind of had to fight her way up. And just the confidence, her maturity, her ability to understand her consumer. I'm tremendously excited about the episode that we have just shot. And I really hope that when it comes out, you will enjoy it just as much as I did.
Welcome to The Barbershop and great to meet you. What did you think of The Barbershop when I invited you for season 3 also? We're not able to, because we're in different cities, we're not able to make it happen.
Yes.
But when you were going to come, did you have a point of view? Ki kya baat karni hai, kaise baat karni hai, etc. Like what things you wanted to cover?
Like I was telling you, I am familiar with your brand. I think your brand has done very well. Also in my household, I am the only woman. I'm surrounded by 3 men. And one of them has a beard, one of them has very long hair. And one of them is just a regular. But so I was familiar with your brand. I was familiar with the product, the positioning. And I knew about your podcast also, primarily because you created a bit of a stir with one of your podcast teasers.
One of many podcast teasers. And
yeah, and that intrigued me. And then that's when I started to sort of go in and look at a little bit. And it was around the time that you had already invited me. So so I thought I'll just get to know a little bit more. And I saw a few of your other podcasts.
Yeah, so you have kind of... Of course, been been a CEO, been a senior leader, board member, and entrepreneur. But let's kind of talk a little bit more about the entrepreneurial journey and the inspiration for financial inclusion for women, and hence SALT. But talk a little bit about the thesis, a little bit about what it meant to do. It clearly seems to be a mission oriented, purpose driven business. And what's the last 4 or 5 years been like? Let's kind of go deeper into that.
Sure. I think for most of us, last 4 or 5 years would be some form of shock and change primarily because of COVID, right? Because if it wasn't, then something is wrong with you, right? And so even for me, it was a double shock because it was COVID and my mother was diagnosed with cancer. So I was with her in the hospital. I was working at Citi. It was a big job putting all my large team to remote work. But I was able to work out of the hospital because I had to. And it started to lead to very meaningful conversations with my mother. And I was never as close to my mother as I was to my father, because my father is the erudite person in the family. When I was in the hospital, I started to talk to her. And she was a school principal. And she changed many girls' lives in her own way because she worked in very, very small schools, rural areas. So when she started to talk about her life, and it was the first time I was having conversations with her, because I'd never really spoken to her. I went to the hostel when I was 14. It was regular stories. You come home, you crib about the food and stuff like that. So I started to talk to her, and I started seeing her in a different way. But I also started to see women's lives in a different way. Because my own life, for lucky circumstances, had not been difficult. Even though I came from a very small school, Hindi medium, no privilege in that sense.
You grew up in Bihar, right?
I grew up in Bihar. So I was that person who didn't value any of this stuff. I was like, I had to move out. I have to constantly keep growing. I have to constantly keep doing bigger and bigger things. And then suddenly I was talking to her, and she started to talk about things. And for me, life had been like, okay, next big thing. So because I was so focused on the next big thing, that I don't think I was ever sitting back and thinking that something was an achievement or that something was hardship. You know how it is, that phase of life. And also I ended up doing men's jobs all along, because those are the jobs that were available. Those are the jobs that came my way. I did them well. I don't think I had, a little bit here and there, but nothing major personal. And then I was talking to my mother, and we would talk about, other things. And I started to see a little bit of the woman's life in a different way. And then my later, who became my co-founder, Chaitra, she came to my life at the time. I'd known her for a long time. But she started to come and talk to me about what was happening at her first startup, and she was moving out of there. And she wanted to build something in the space of women and money, because in her own life experience, she felt that that relationship was broken. And it wasn't just broken for her, it was broken for a lot of educated women, which was her, sort of problem to solve. I had no plans to be a co-founder. I had no plans to be an entrepreneur. If at all you had asked me 10 years ago what I would do after a career in corporation, I would probably have said I'll live in the mountains and I'll write, okay? Because those were my things. But she started talking to me, and I started to help her, because it was she understood the product part. She understood, obviously, she brought a lot of that design thinking, etc. But she needed to solve for all the financial, regulatory, license, all that stuff. So we started to have these conversations remotely. Everybody was on Zoom. So you made time, because you were saving the time on travel and stuff. And I was in particular with this mother situation. So one fine day, I told my mother that I have this friend who wants to build this thing for women and, to help them to build wealth, to help them to become independent, to help them to, think of money not just as something that they spend, but as something that is an enabler for bigger things in their lives. And they are not dependent on men in particular for those decisions. So my mother was very blunt about it. So as soon as I told her this, and I said, sometimes I feel like maybe that's what I should do. And my mother says, so, and she's, my mother only spoke Hindi. So she said, "Tu kyun nahi kar rahi ho?" So I said, kyunki beta abhi padhai kar raha hai. My younger son was still in his undergrad. And the elder one had decided to be a filmmaker after his law school. So it's not like he was earning money or whatever. So I said, I think it's a little early for me to do that. And my mother said, "Tumhe kitne paise chahiye?" So I said, whatever, some number. So she said, "Tumhare paas hai?" So I said, "Haan, usse toh jyada hi hai." So she said, "Toh fir?" it was the simplicity of that thinking of what do you need in life from a person who was going through her own life and thinking, what is my legacy? What will people remember me for? And so she kind of pushed me to think about that. And, by the evening, I had made the decision that I'll do this. I'll build Salt with Chaitra. Now, to your question on what is the thesis, we built the thesis after a lot of what we thought were very long conversations with women. We would start out for a 15-minute conversation. And like you said, we should have actually done a podcast maybe. and those conversations would easily grow into a 45-minute. With Chaitra, they would go on for 1.5 hours. With me, sometimes shorter. And then we did them in groups. So we would talk to a group of women, and we would start asking them about, you know, what do you do with money? How do you think about it? Why don't you, do you think you know enough, et cetera, et cetera.
And was this a particular kind, was this a customer persona that you had? Was it a job seeking, a job, someone in the labor force or someone at home or just across age groups or was it everyone?
No, our initial thesis was built for young women who were otherwise earning, had access to smartphones, had either already held a job or, you know, some source of money or had just let it go right now. Because there are a lot of women in that category in their 30s, right? Because they've earned some money and now they're on a break and they want to come back. So in their heads, they don't think of themselves as housewives, which is why I don't like to use that terminology that we were talking to housewives. These were women who saw themselves as, I'm on a break and I want to come back. And for them, money had a very important meaning because the money was going to be the enabler for those decisions for them, right? To come back, to get, go for a training. And so these were very, very interesting conversations. And we started to think about how women prioritize, you know, money, how money changes the priorities of that woman. The fact, not just money in itself, but the fact that she has to ask somebody for money is a very big, you know, determinant of her life.
Agreed.
And these are educated girls. And these are not like, you know, girls who did not have access to education or access to technology. So it, so what we realized is that, and we talk to men also. It's not that we only talk to girls. Young men, I think, have very similar attitude towards money that women have. I mean, you know, the gap is narrowing in the sense that they also don't like to stand in a bank branch or they also don't like men in pinstripe suits making decisions about their money. They think differently about money. So fundamentally, for me, the thesis very clearly was that financial services does not include women. I mean, the data is out there, right? Single-digit participation in most things, low double-digit in credit. And to me, it is what it is because women don't like to be sold. Like financial services is sold.
Yeah.
It is not bought.
Correct.
It is not bought and therefore it doesn't come into your life at the time when you have a need for it.
Correct.
It is sold to you and you create the need for it. Now, that flexibility is very different for men versus women.
Correct.
Across age, across class. So, which is the reason why you will find a lot of this type 2 problem in finance that money goes in the name of women but is used by men.
Correct.
Because her life control is not in her hand. But money is not coming to her when she needs it. Money is coming to her through a system of sales which is designed for a very different purpose. So that was my theory, that eventually finance, for it to grow in the economy in which we live, because the levers of the economy are not job driven. You know, to your podcast's theme, the levers of growth in this country are entrepreneurship and a lot of freelance work.
Yeah.
And to those people, money flow in their lives is not the same as what it was for our generation of job seekers for whom the financial system was built.
Correct.
So I have been a regulator and I have seen this financial system build across these years when, you know, bank licenses were granted to these new private sector banks and public sector banks changed to CBS and et cetera. And they were built for a service class and therefore everything has an EMI, which is tagged to a monthly salary. Your SIPs are tagged to your monthly income, your ability to borrow. Your ability to say create wealth. Everything is tagged to a earning period in your life, which starts at in your 20s and ends in your 60s. The fact of the matter is that women's lives don't follow that pattern most of the time. They take breaks or they start late. There's a lot of late stage entrepreneur women, and that's a pretty important thing that we don't realize. So we started to realize that, you know, and it's the same for a lot of young men. So young men are going to have the same financial difficulties that women have always had. So we weren't solving for women because our heart was bleeding for women. But what we realized is that the problems that women have had with money is the problem that young men are also going to have with money, because they are going to choose, you know, work that is mobile, flexible, freelance, or become entrepreneurs. They may not earn for a very long time and then suddenly have a lot of money. So yeah. They suddenly, from being a, you know, borrowing customer, they may want a wealth product or very different needs.
Yes.
From what the banking system is right. Geared to deliver. So the idea behind SALT was that how do you take the primary relationship that a person has with money, which is everybody spends, and help them to then change that, pivot that relationship to asset creation. So it's a very simple tool. It's like a Google bar. You drop your expenses or whatever. We organize your financial data and we give you a nudge to say, why don't you do X, Y, Z? and then a certain, you know, number of people will start that, and then because it's engagement. So basically user experience that will help you to buy the product when you need it rather than, you know, selling it to you. So that's the premise. It's not that complicated to a person who understands how financial system incentives work, but it is fairly dramatic in its promise that people will buy financial products when they need it. And so, yeah, so we went with the thesis that women are better users for the beginning. And yet when we listed the app, 45% of our users were men. So of the 250,000 people who use the app, because it helped us to train the model, build a more sophisticated response system of the model, 45% were men.
Hmm.
And we weren't restricting the men from coming to it. But we were building for the lifestyle that the woman has.
Mm.
So the thesis was very strongly for the women, but it wasn't an inclusion product to that, from that perspective.
Got it.
Which I think got us into this predicament where impact investors think that we are a rich people app and therefore why fund them. And for the others, it's a inclusion product. So we kind of...
Yeah,
you know?
Neither here nor there. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah. But I wanted to actually ask you about labor participation and what it means for financial independence slash literacy slash confidence of women. A lot of this becomes very anecdotal, right? Because it's got so much social norm filtering over just... Like, the data will never tell you the full story. For example, my home is one where my mother's income has historically been zero. But my mother's financial agency is very high.
Mm.
My father's income is 100% of the home income until Yash and I started earning. But his financial agency was far lower because he would just give the money to my mother and she would budget the home. Every home that they have bought, the move back to India, the homes that they have bought, the cars that they have bought, the schools that we went to, every decision was my mother's decision and my father was a active participant with soft veto in a way, but my mother had the hard veto, right? That's one element where income is not there, but agency is high. I'm assuming that is a minority situation, right? Because agency is where the spectrum becomes very, very wide. And especially if you go towards socioeconomic strata towards the lower end, you will see that income is high, agency is low, which is totally the opposite, right? Where social structures are such that you're earning the money and you're coming back and you're giving it to a family because you're the daughter-in-law and your agency or access to that is almost not there. And that's why we have kind of seen a whole host of issues prop up with, you know, with unhappiness, with participation rates being super low or at least counted paid participation in labor. And the other aspect which I think I notice a lot is that women... Even like my business school friends who were at McKinsey, who are clearly exceptional. I have a VC friend who's a woman. She's a venture capitalist. Her job involves allocation of capital to risk assets to create 4X for a fund. Okay, and one of the top VC funds in India. Personal capital in fixed deposits. Mutual fund exposure, zero. Equity exposure, zero. Real estate karna hai, nahi karna hai? Pata nahi yaar. I'll ask my dad. I have to figure it out. Have you thought about it? No, it's too painful to think about. Farak nahi padega. I'm like, no, man. Just open a spreadsheet. You'll figure out that the delta of your decisions are huge. So then it kind of leads to that also. So there is a clearly structural slash real issue. And then there are ripple effects. At least that's the way I think about it. There are ripple effects onto women across the board where then it becomes a choice issue also. I don't know whether this is choice or this is just... conditioning, I don't know what it is. But on average, I don't think that even the most capable woman with the most agency is actually taking the right calls for her money. And if she is not, then how can we expect it for anyone else?
Okay, so I will just...
Okay, sorry, it's a long question.
Yeah. No, it's very fair because we... many of these anecdotal stories is what prompted us to start scratching the surface and seeing what is it in reality? Are we... living in a, you know, fake world, or is it something real? So one of the things we did was we created a quiz. And I don't know if you've seen it. It's called the Money Personality Test. No. And some 300,000 people have taken it.
Okay.
So so now we have very robust understanding that this model works. So it classifies people into five categories. Hi. Men, women, whoever took. And then but because we had the data, we started to see how men respond versus how women respond. Hi. And then because we were doing these interviews, we started to develop some degree of insights into this issue. And you're right about the agency thing, like your mother's example. And that's not very rare, let me tell you this. A lot of men earn and give the money to the women. And almost all households have this very interesting allocation of responsibility of money where the men earn and the assets get created in the men's names. Mm. And the women either earn or don't earn, but they take care of all the expenses of the family. So women have a very granular understanding of money because they know how much is going to the dhobi versus how much is going to the EMI or insurance. They know that, which is why our primary product is that classification of money, because that's what you know. And you go from the known to the unknown, and that helps you to kind of bridge that gap. But what is very interesting is one of the young girls we were interviewing said this. We couldn't say it better. She said, in my household, up to 4-digit money decisions were made by my mother, and anything 5-digit and above was made by my father. Mm. So what you call the soft veto of your father, if you break it down a little bit more, it may not be true in your case, but in many households, those decisions where the men have the soft veto are the most meaningful asset creation decisions. So the women, over a period of time, the young women who are growing up in these households are seeing that, mom gets to decide the driver's salary and pay my fees and take me to the shop to buy a pair of earrings. But dad gets to decide which college I go to. Okay. And that then tells the girl that this is what the life that she's going to live, and it prepares her for that. Now, you could be like me, who could be the primary money earner of my family. Whereas, for most girls, the expectation growing up is that they will earn, that the man will earn more than them. And because the man will earn more than them, no matter how qualified they are, and to your McKinsey group example is very powerful. The VC example is very powerful. My third co-founder, Aditi Cholapurkar, she's IIM Ahmedabad grad, much younger woman. She said the same thing, that on her group of IIMA men and women, there would be conversations during COVID about investing in stocks, because, the markets were very interesting at the time. And she said hardly one or two women would participate in those conversations, she being one of them. So for her, the primary impetus to do SALT was this sense of almost humiliation about not being a part of that same cohort which you are used to being a part of, because you grow up believing that you're equal. Your parents have raised you like your brother. And then there is a time where it just begins to diverge. And I personally, I could tell you stories sitting here till 9 o'clock about women who are Supreme Court. I mean, I know this auntie who's a Supreme Court,
judge.
Lawyer who walked out of a marriage with nothing, because, and she didn't sue her husband because she said it was almost insulting for me to do that. But I realized at some point of time that I was earning the money and he was investing it all in his name, and I all I did was just walk out, leaving the house and all the financial assets in his name, and rebuild my life with my daughters. So, and I know so many, I know a woman who is a tech company CFO. She walks out of her marriage, and that's the day she realizes that all assets are in her husband's names. So it's, I'm talking about women who are earning. I'm not even talking about women who are not earning. Women who are not earning definitely are at a major disadvantage in the situation. The only thing is that in India, we are not raised to be prepared for these situations. We are raised to be prepared for the happy situation of, tolerating mild humiliation in your marital home so that your room and board is taken care of. That's pretty much what the life of the woman generally is. And that conditioning is very, very strong. So in fact, when we launched SALT, we realized that the experience was very valued, and especially because we were going after a certain type of design-sensitive person. They loved it. So they loved the app and they loved to use it. But when they actually came to it, putting in their money into an asset, they would take time. So to your other theme of saying, are they too cautious? Are they actually not making these decisions even if they have the agency? Are they being too slow about it? Do they ask too many people? All of those answers are yes. They ask too many people about it, which is sometimes aggravating. Because you don't ask. I mean, I have friends who will take a flight to Dubai to run a shopping bill in, you know, 6 digits or 7 digits. But to put an to write a check to a startup of whatever, $100,000, they will ask. They will not just ask their husbands, because if they ask their husbands, the husband will put them on to some chartered accountant who will put them on to some flunky chartered accountant who will put them on to some more flunky chartered accountant. Women don't want that humiliation. So I don't blame them for that choice. It is the way money is structured that you just suddenly, you know, turn it the moment it comes to creating financial assets. Otherwise, it's all good. The game is so beautifully played in households when it comes to equality of spending, and then all men stand at the bar and make jokes about how their wives spend on their credit cards and how their wives are the primary spenders in their families. And so, you know, it's been a very interesting journey for me, because I never thought about it like that. My own life was very different. My parents' life was very different. So I grew up in this very different environment of money. And then it just, like, just working with all these women and listening to their stories just opened my eyes to a very different psychological aspect of money. And of course, there are sociological aspects. Like you talk about lower income households where women earn, but they don't have autonomy to make decisions about their money. They want, somebody wants to go. I know a girl who's, it was so beautiful. She is a home chef, and she's a very good home chef. She charges a premium. She really runs a very neat place. But I asked her, what do you want to do next? And she said, I would like to go to France and do a pastry making whatever course. And I said, so why don't you do it already? Because she was in her 30s. And she said, because my husband has a startup, and I'm waiting for him to stabilize, and the kids will grow up, and then I will do it. And I said, it's just 3 months. Why don't you just do it? And she said, yeah, it's just 3 months, but it's also a lot of money. And then I have to wait for this and wait for that. And, you know, men don't put their lives on hold like that. Women put their lives on hold for money a lot. And we definitely, and therefore when, you know, I was talking to you about being stuck in this place between impact and, you know, just creating a great product.
Yeah.
Actually, the two things are possible to do together.
I agree.
So you don't need to really, I mean, I'm sure you understand that, right?
No,
so,
I know a lot of, it's not intuitive. It took a while. Huh. It took a while for people to realize that IRR and impact investing is a real thing.
Yeah.
That it need not be philanthropic only, because it, and then you have to figure out how that actually happens.
Yeah.
And someone told me this very interestingly. He said that the whole premise of economic growth is basically we take resources from the ground.
Yeah.
We take oil and minerals and resources, we convert it into products and services, and we sell it to the world.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how it is. And we have to find ways of replenishing the resources that are in the ground.
Yeah.
And if we're able to do that and create value around it, that's impact investing with IRR.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. That's a real smart way of thinking about it. But
which is exactly what I'm saying in finance.
Yeah.
That if you want financial services to grow, you can't afford to neglect a vast segment of consumers who today are buying gold for lack of a better alternative, or real estate for want of a better alternative. And they are, or they are just not participating in your growth process because they are running that cake shop, but not scaling it because she doesn't want to borrow. She doesn't want to become that, you know, take that burden. A lot of women who are doing already well, they consider a loan to be a burden. So then who are you again going and selling your loans to? Lower and lower categories of, you know, just young boys between whatever, 22 and 40, who are taking infinite amount of personal loans and trying to do, you know, because they need to live their lives. They're doing different things with that money. But you're missing out on all these women who have come from the same families, who have gone to the same schools and colleges, who have the same skill sets, but they're not borrowing from you. So if you want to expand that consumer pie of financial services, can you afford to lose out on so many customers?
Is this a product availability issue or is it a social conditioning issue? Because I always feel like making the product available will... I don't think today personal loans are not available to women.
Aha, that's a very good segue into a long discussion. But essentially, you could say that it's a it's not a product availability issue, but it is a product availability issue.
Because I would assume that if you are, the more risk averse you are, the better you are as a customer, right? Or no?
So here's how it works.
I also feel like, for example, like this, a lot of my statements today might be like, can be just broad brush stereotyping, but I'm going to make them anyway because this is a safe space. And I'm assuming that genders are different for a reason, right? I've in general noticed, like we now have 180 employees, of which roughly 65 are women. I've generally noticed financial risk aversion and sincerity as clearly, if you were to like do a normal distribution of men versus women, the average woman would be higher than the average man, and hence ability to pay back, and hence obviously a better customer.
Yeah, so then you are already answering the question. So think about what is the product deficiency. The product deficiency is that you are selling the same product, a 38% interest product, to the girl who you are talking about, whose interest, who's risk averse and who has higher repayment ability and willingness, compared to somebody who has taken out three different personal loans and tried three different things to do. So that product availability, which we think is the product availability for all of these people, is actually not product availability. You know what I'm saying?
But why? Why would that not be the case?
Because obviously, if I am that consumer who is more cautious or who is likely to borrow more to my need and who is likely to do more diligence and repay your money, you should give me a lower rate of interest, no?
Correct.
But you won't. Because your product availability has been created for this rain shower of loans, which can be sold through platforms that are primarily
it does not the NPI ratio does not feed back into the product itself.
So I will tell you why. Because it doesn't really matter. The number of women who you will be able to target with all of that effort will be so low still that you will not do it. So for the last 3 days, I've been at these entrepreneurship conferences, right? So everybody is trying to solve for this problem of how do we have more women entrepreneurs scale. Because it's not that women don't start in entrepreneurship. They do. But they are typically quite happy doing the small because it's like they have to answer so many questions when they borrow. And first to family. So to your question of social conditioning.
That's something a product cannot solve.
So aap ghar mein baith ke silai kar rahe ho. ठीक है अब आपने अच्छी सिलाई करनी शुरू कर दी आपको अच्छे पैसे मिल रहे हैं आप अब चाहते हो कि चार टेलर रख के बाहर बैठ के कराएंगे हाँ सो फर्स्ट यू हैव टू आंसर द क्वेश्चन क्यों क्या ज़रूरत है बाहर जाके करने की क्या ज़रूरत है अच्छा तो कर रही हो घर में हो रहा है पैसे आ रहे हैं सो यू इट्स नॉट जस्ट द लोन बिफोर यू गेट टू दैट पॉइंट ऑफ सेइंग शुड आई ब्रिंग इन इक्विटी और you know, debt to expand my business, you first have to answer a bunch of questions, which for a man are actually almost a rite of passage. If they don't do it, then they're asked those questions. Ki bhai, tu ghar mein baitha rehta hai, kaam hi nahi karta hai. Until he has a shop or some place where he wears his shoes and goes in the morning, he's not considered to be employed.
Is this let me cut this across a bunch of axes for you, and I would love to know this. Is this a North India, South India issue?
So
I would assume this to be a far more loaded in the north situation than in the south.
So I shouldn't be talking to South India so much because my own research is not that deep into it. But I'll tell you something. There is currently a project in which I'm sort of getting to know about, and it's in Tamil Nadu, and it is around women entrepreneurs and what problems to be solved so that we can increase this capital availability to the right type of women entrepreneurs at scale. So yeah. That's the project, and I'm very looking forward to, learning more on that. But some cultural variations will always be there, not just between North and South, but also between East and West. Like, you know, I can imagine a Gujarati family with access to, a block printing press where the woman is the primary designer, being more open to either giving her equity or family capital or helping her borrow as long as there's a market where she can sell. Because that's eventually how all businesses scale. And all women-owned businesses that scale also scale in the same fashion. It's not that women-owned businesses scale without availability of external capital by way of debt or equity. So, but to get to that point is usually a slightly more longer and more hazardous journey for women. And we haven't solved for that yet. So one of the things that we think remain to be solved, and a lot of people are trying to solve it. I mean, the government wants to solve it by saying we want to build whatever 2 crore nari, har ghar entrepreneur. Like the government wants to solve it at scale, but at a nano level. SIDBI wants to solve it at a different level of scale. You know, we want to solve it at a different. So there are enough people who want to solve it, but you won't just solve it by taking the same product and making them more available. Because as to your question, they are already available. So if these products were working, then these would have already worked. Nobody is preventing women from going and, you know, buying mutual funds. But to your VC friend's example, she's still not buying it because probably she doesn't want to explain to somebody if it doesn't do well. Because giving that answer when something doesn't work is also a reality for more women, I guess. I mean, it's not for me.
You think women who are independent and earning their own money, which might be higher, is they still accountable for returns?
I feel like
I feel
like they feel more defensive about a loss because they don't. So it's not that they're risk averse in the first place, but it's like if the guy, if she loses a gold. So my favorite example is if I lose one diamond earring, okay, the other one's also useless. But who will ask me a question? Who will say what? I mean, in the first place, nobody needs to know. Secondly, even if you know, I'll tell you, you know, kahin gir gaya hoga. Thirdly, you won't care. If I, God forbid, I make an investment in some stock.
Startup or stock. Huh?
And pehle toh aapko batana padega because the most families have money set up jointly. Then there'll be some relationship guy, some forms, 100 forms will be filed for you to get started. So mostly you will take the help of the guy. Now that stock falls. Okay. Now the number of, why did you have to do this? So there's way too many answers. Yeah, of course that
happens. Across the
board? Yeah. Either it happens or even if it doesn't happen, because she has seen it happening to other people, she worries that it might happen. You know, but the good part is that when they start doing it, that's the good part. The good part is that when they actually start doing it, because they are so good at it, because they are so thoughtful and slow, most of the time, they actually do very well.
Yeah.
So like your mother or this other amazing woman I met who was a government servant's wife. And she put both her children through education in America by taking that government servant's salary, investing it. And, and she was a Sanskrit graduate and she was amazing. She was amazing because she knew everything. And she just sits and watches television. She doesn't invest in stock. She only does mutual funds, long-term investing, does it very well, very thoughtfully, knows what timeline she has, knows what she wants to buy, listens to people, gets her information. So you do get women who, once they start doing it, they do it very well. They're not so cowboyish most of the time.
I think because they back themselves and have conviction, they like women in general don't have a fake it till you make it situation mostly. Like they like, for example, my mother will know when she will say, like both our moms, for example, took really large decisions. Your mom with telling you to start a company at the career stage you were at. It was a strategic large decision, which she kind of with her perspective gave you a vision that maybe you were too close to the problem to see. My mom does the same thing with my dad. Like, she's in fact taken. So if she does the 4-digit decisions, he does the 5-digit ones, she does the 7-digit ones. Right? So assets in our home, for example, and I've actually seen this, the women are the ones taking the big financial calls. So I always wonder whether if women kind of get into the game, actually play a better role.
It'll be transformational for this country if we can unlock this resource educated women.
Tell me, is it an education issue?
No. It's not. It's the other way around. I'm saying it will be transformational if we unlock this resource of educated women who are not being used as a resource.
Tell me one thing. What is the percentage of income to total income of women compared to assets to total assets of women? Is more income flowing towards creating assets and both ratios are low?
So
women earning more and assets are less?
So first off, gender desegregated data in this country is extremely deficient. So one of the problems we are all struggling with is the data.
But banks would know, right?
No. So banks don't know because the fields. So one of the things that, in fact, one of the projects I'm working on, if you know, I'm on the board of an organization called CGAP.
Yeah, you're telling me about,
which is a World Bank body. And one of the things that we are now beginning to do in India is to look at the data architecture for gender data.
Okay.
Because the only data that you will find on women will be the microfinance level of women. And that's because banks can capture that data. That's because priority sector lending in India has been an incentive-driven mechanism, and therefore banks have an incentive to capture that data to claim that incentive. Other than that, for most purposes, it is very hard to combine that data. Also, the data has the type 1, type 2 problem, right? Because I went to IIT Kanpur, the incubator, and I was doing this research for a book, actually, that I'm writing. And I asked them, tell me how many startups that you have incubated have women in them. And it was, the number was more than 50%. And so then the woman thought I was being too happy. So she, the woman who was showing me the book, and she said, no, but you know, this is boys, when they start their companies, they put their mother's names, right? So you can't go by this data. So so that's true. So that's one problem of over-inclusion, because the men will put the name of the woman, but the woman will not be playing a role. But the type 2 problem is even more interesting, which is where the woman will actually be running the whole business.
The director of the men.
But the director will be a man.
Wow.
And the face of the company will be a man.
Wow, really?
Because the woman's too busy doing the, you know, she's organizing the supply chain, she's getting the customer, she's doing all the other stuff. So she really doesn't...
That happens?
Yeah. So a lot of the financial decisions are left to the husband when the business begins to get a little bit bigger. So you have a lot of enterprise that is built by women, where the finance aspect then begins to get taken. The husband then, many business stories that, and I'll write about this in my book because it's based on a substantial number of interviews. Then the men come into the business at some stage. And I'm not saying they do it with an evil intention or anything. it's just a normal thing, because at the end of the day, for as long as your family is doing well, it is a family, right? You're a unit. You want the business to be successful. So you play to your strengths, and your strength as a woman very much lies in growing the business that you have built. You are now suddenly dealing with, if you had 3 artisans, you now have 30 artisans. If you had 3 companies buying from you, you now have 30 companies buying. You have so much, you have staff, and you are good at all of that. So then you say, okay, like one of my friends says, and then you think, oh, the money is just the blue collar job. So let's give it to this guy, because what does he know about any of this other stuff? He's walking into my business now. And so the guy takes the blue collar job and does the makes the decisions about whether we should borrow more or expand. And sometimes they do a great job of it, and sometimes they don't. But that's okay. That's just, I mean, as long as things are normal, I don't think that that's a problem. But you do have the opportunity there for, a lot more businesses to grow. And there's nothing wrong. A lot of small businesses, both in this country as well as across the world, become family enterprises, because your family is the best resource available to you for cheap labor, managerial enterprise, highly trustworthy. So why will you not let your husband or your son make decisions, right, when it comes to your company? So I met this wonderful woman in Banaras who was a late stage entrepreneur. She's about 50 when she started this very high end Banaras design project. And she did very well, and after some time, her husband... So she used to, make these expensive saris, and she used to give them to her husband that when you go to your office, post karwa dijiyega. To gaadi mein dal deti thi. To wo driver jaake wo post kar deta tha. Unko order aate the Instagram pe. So at some time after a couple of years, her husband says, because there were too many parcels going, so the husband came home and she said, tum ye saadiyan bechti rehti ho, par kabhi batao mujhe kitne pichle saal tumne kitne paise ki saadiyan bheji hain. So she said, I don't know, because she was just so busy getting those saris made, orders taken, because she was a single person. So then she said, we sat down and calculated, and it was a decent number. I think it was some 50-60 lakh type of number. So then the husband said, that's good. And then when she got to a certain number, then her husband left his job and he started to work with her to do this. And it's a beautiful story, because then during COVID, her son and her son, who worked in a lifestyle company, he says, I realized that I live this shitty life in Bombay, working for a salary for a company where my strategic input, because he worked in whatever, is rarely, used or appreciated. Why don't I do this for my mother? So he comes back and he starts this, he takes charge of the sales and digital stuff and all that. But the most beautiful is that the daughter-in-law, who's a very gorgeous looking young woman, she models the saris. And, if you see a lot of enterprises grow like that, and it's a good thing. Yeah. But the thing is, then you get to the point where you now need to, grow it more. That's where external investment or debt type of thing begins to come in. And it's for all of us to realize how this resource can become bigger. And yeah. and maybe Asari is not a good example because it, although it's a huge market, it's also a highly competitive
yes.
market. But then some will survive and some will scale and some will do well. So yeah.
That's what they said about men's formal wear until Manyavar came along, and you could say there's a national brand for men's formal wear.
Yeah.
It was unimaginable.
Yeah.
But there's a brand. And for saris, there are some nallis, etc. There are some large-scale yeah. brands. But truly, I think the unorganized market is a lot more.
There are a lot of things that you'll find in the entrepreneurship space that I think can scale, that has a market, that these women have the competence and the ability. Food, for example. Hospitality. I traveled through 30 of India's tier 2 cities for my book. And I found that almost in every city, there are women running cafes. Because I think when they went to, most of them have this story to tell that they came from another city after their education, and they found that there was no place in their city where they could just go and have a relaxed coffee. Yeah. And so they started a cafe. Yeah. And I think we underestimate the importance of making a city into a city by creating public spaces. Yeah. And a lot of women are actually doing that, because what we don't realize is that women are very important vectors of social change and custom change, because they travel, they're forced to replant themselves into different places, which men don't have to do. Yeah. Men only migrate when they want to migrate, and therefore they're chasing a job or an economic opportunity. And so their thought process is very devoid of culture in general. So they go to a place, they're making the money, they're the, like, and not a bad thing, I'm just saying that's how it happens. But for women, what happens, she didn't choose to go to Nagpur, she didn't choose to go to Raipur, she didn't choose to go to Coimbatore. She got married, she finds herself, and then her network is broken, she's not going back home anytime soon, and so she needs to find an opportunity in this city. And so many women I met who decided to create that as an opportunity, converted their homes into an Airbnb, or converted a little place into a nursery school, converted a small space into a cafe. So there's a lot of entrepreneurship in women space, which for a traditional investor is very hard to understand.
Yeah.
And the reason it's hard to understand is because you will ask the same question that you ask a 28-year-old boy when he is an entrepreneur, because the typical person that you're used to dealing is an ambitious, smart, understands his margins, understands his product, understands his market, understands competition guy, is you have the confidence that he will be able to get by and you know, break through. That's who you are looking for. When you are sitting across a 45-year-old woman who says, I decided to make this heirloom brand of saris because my grandmother had the best saris and I thought people might like it, it's not something that you're used to evaluating. Right. You don't know what parameters to bring to that. People ask us questions in Salt about the same thing, that the data is anecdotal, that how do you know that women are not already buying the products that are available in the market? And so you, and obviously you don't trust the wisdom of a 45-year-old woman who was sitting at home till yesterday and suddenly decided to become an entrepreneur. And I'm not saying all of them will become successful, because it's the same logic, right? Yeah. Not all 28-year-old men are becoming successful entrepreneurs, but some of them will. Yeah. And so the top of the funnel is so large. And when you, you know, interestingly, when people talk about women being risk averse and not being, you know, not doing good with their money versus men, what you are missing out is that because the population of men with money is so large that you actually ignore the men who are not good with their money. You just let them fall by the wayside. There are so many of them, my father being one of them. There's so many men who are pathetic with money.
On average, people are bad with money. On average.
Yeah.
Men are bad, women are not participating. Yeah. That's the way I would kind of think about it.
But when you look at the data, then you will still look at a Zerodha data or Grow data, and you'll look at all these like high adrenaline traders, and you'll so the stereotype in your mind of a risk-taking man who makes money on money is of a man versus the risk-averse of the woman. But if you flip that, you'll find a lot.
From a lending standpoint, you would much rather prefer the latter, right? As a, from a product, of course you would. From a lending product standpoint, yeah. Right?
Or even in trading. I mean, for you as a platform, it may be better that they're there, even if they're losing money.
That is true.
But for the customer, like at least in Salt, we want to build a product which is good for the customer. So if it is good for the customer that they do the cautious thing to build long term wealth, it is actually good for them to be doing this, right?
Yeah.
So we just don't. So when we apply these filters to men versus when we apply to women, we are actually conditioned a lot by our own understanding and ideas, right, of success. And that's why you can't always say that the product is not available, but the solutioning around the product or the taking that product to the right market or the discovering that right market or selling it at the right place, at the right price point. There is a lot to be solved for that. At least I know that in finance because, you know, what I've done all my life. So,
But yeah. Tell me a little bit. I think you said that, you know, you've kind of put the product on pause. Like what was
no,
the issue
I think
there?
So I'll tell you what. When we started out, our conviction very strongly was that we are building a product that will change behavior. It was as simple as that. So
that's
it will
hard
change
to do
behavior.
Also, right?
Yeah, but then you look at finance, right? This entire story of fintech is just one story. You change the behavior of the consumer from taking out cash from his wallet to taking their phone and scanning a QR code,
correct.
That's the entire fintech story.
Correct.
Nothing else has changed. Banks are still doing the same old thing. People are still going to State Bank of India and sitting on the floor waiting for their turn in line to get their pension out. Nothing has fundamentally changed, right? But that new product that came, it managed to change behavior a lot.
Yeah.
And the other one is that, you know, young people buying more equities, doing more F&O trading, you know, trying to build wealth for themselves. So
there, actually, you're right. There is a way payments have changed. There's a way in which investing has changed. And I think there's access to...
And both are behavior changes.
Correct. And there's also access to easy loans.
Lending.
Now.
Yeah.
Like massive.
Loan to hum nahi baat karenge, because loan is a very, very simple product. See,
correct.
What you have to realize in money is that a payment is a transaction is very easy to, in a way easy to change that behavior, because once I give you money, and you take the money, we both build trust in the system, right? So we are used to doing that trust building by giving cash to you. You look at a note and if it doesn't look fake, then we are good, right?
Yeah.
Similarly, when I transfer you money on Paytm or PhonePe or 100 different platforms, as long as you've got that money, you have built trust. It doesn't matter what the platform is, right?
Correct.
The platform could be Bombay Shaving Company.
Correct.
As long as we are getting money, we are
money.
Good. In lending, it's even better. Mere ko kya matlab hai, tum kaun ho? Tum mujhe paise de rahe ho. वापस लेना तुम्हारा काम है सो आई विल ट्रस्ट यू हुएवर यू आर यू गिविंग मी मनी आई एम गुड इफ आई द लेस सेंसिटिव आई एम टुवर्ड्स इंटरेस्ट रेट द वर्स द कंज्यूमर आई एम
करेक्ट
राइट एवरी बैंकर नोज दैट इफ अ पर्सन वॉक्स इन टू माई रूम एंड सेज सर मुझे किसी भी रेट पे पैसे दे दीजिए तो वो बंदा तो पैसे नहीं लौटाने वाला है वही बंदा पैसे लौटाने वाला है जो आके आपका आधे घंटे दिमाग खाएगा कि नहीं नहीं मेरा रेट कम कर दो मैं ये अच्छा करूंगा मैं ये करूंगा मैं वो करूंगा है ना So the point is that aapne wo trust ki aapko zarurat hi nahi hai trust building ki. Problems in financial services always start when you go beyond these two products. Wahan pe kuch nahi change hua hai. Wahan pe abhi bhi aapko phone karke koi ghatiya insurance bech raha hai ya achha bhi insurance bech raha hai. Aapke luck ki baat hai. Aapke knowledge ki baat hai. Ya koi aapko call karke SIP karne ke liye keh raha hai.
Credit card bech raha hai, right?
So if you want to change that process to helping a consumer understand their lifestyle and their needs and pulling the right product at the right price point for them because they know, like, nobody can mis-sell to me, right? I will go and ask questions about saying, hey, look, how can you give me a loan at this rate? I'm this, my CIBIL score is this, I'm this person, whatever. So we want to make more people those people.
It's also insane. By the way, Aseem, in fact, told us on a podcast recently that people might know what interest rate means, but they don't know the implication of an increased interest rate. So he said, 20 साल का अगर तुम्हारा घर का लोन है और इंटरेस्ट रेट एक टक्के से बढ़ जाता है तो योर 20 ईयर रीपेमेंट बिकम्स 32 ईयर्स. आई वाज लाइक, क्या बात कर रहे हो, चांस ही नहीं. बोलते करो एक्सेल निकालो, कंपाउंड इंटरेस्ट का फॉर्मूला पता है. आई सेड हाँ. Then he made us do it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
In your mind, it's just like 1%, but it just changes everything.
Apply the same logic to your wealth creation.
100%.
When you are giving 1% commission out to somebody for your mutual fund, which doesn't require any work on their side, right? Versus you doing it, being able to do it yourself. So yeah, it is, money is, it's very hard to grapple with very fundamental money concepts. So our goal actually is to help the consumer get to that point gradually through this process of hyper-engagement with an app, which is constantly just, you know, engaging with them on and telling them fun things about themselves, their own use of money or other. So essentially, the model is built around your lifestyle. So if you are spending on Bombay Shaving Company 5 times in a month, then it will tell you, you know, are you sure you really need all those products? Would you rather take, you know, 500 rupees out of that and put it into an SIP?
And how do you know that? Like, is it an SMS reading thing or is it?
So we built on the account aggregator rails.
Okay.
So account aggregator gives you some data, but essentially in India, because people spend a lot on UPI, it's very hard to get consumer level data. So one of the big deficiencies in India is going to become, and it'll just get worse and worse, because people, when they spend on UPI, you will never know whether I gave you the money as a settlement of debt or whether I gave you the money for a Bombay Shaving Company product or whether I gave you money because I liked your coffee or whatever,
yeah.
Right? I will never know. So what we created was for the consumer to be able to do that. So the model actually builds around your lifestyle, and over a period of time, it begins to give you the right suggestion. So that was the thesis. The thesis is that if you understand your money, if you start to engage with it, you'll get better with it and you'll become a better consumer. To answer your question, what do we think went wrong? I think we tried to do too many things early because we got the money. Like if we hadn't had the money so early, we would have
raised capital upfront. How much did you raise?
So we raised about $2.5 million upfront, okay. And then another $1 million as notes. But so the idea was that because we had money, we hired very smart people, and so we had very smart people. So we built too many things, and then we also got a license to do our own to sell our own mutual funds, etc. So I think what it did was that it
distribution of mutual funds.
We didn't want to do distribution because I fundamentally think that. Scaling distribution inevitably leads to mis-selling. I'm sorry, I'm a bit cynical, but I thought if people buy direct, then it's better. So we were doing direct. So the capital allocation went into these things rather than prolonging the runway. So that's what effectively happened. But then we were faced with the choice of either going for a slightly rushed sales type of experience, which we didn't want to do because we were quite wedded to the idea of not force selling to our users, or saying, let's revisit the strategy. So we opted in favor of revisiting the strategy, and we'll do that next quarter.
Okay, so the app is like, the product is still
the
kind of running.
The product is ready. The product is there, but we took the app off the app store because every customer adds cost to you now. Because we are at a stage where, you know, AWS costs, because the model is big. The model, so every time you ping the model, and many you times during the day, it refreshes, right? So the costs were...
But for the current users who have already...
No, we shut it for them.
Okay, so...
Right now, we just shut it for them. And many of them were very sad because they came back and they said, can you suggest a product like this? Because we really like it and we really miss it. And then I said, okay, would you have paid for it? Because that's the discovery that we have to make, right? If you really like a product, then would you be willing to pay for it? Because in the long term, then that's where you want to get to.
And what's the view on that? Like, you think...
I think they'll pay.
People will pay for this?
Yes. Especially, I think women will pay. One fundamental mistake that I think that I would not make if I do this now is that because everyone in India tells you, are fintech, nobody pays, are Indian customers don't pay, are Indians don't like to pay. And everything that I have seen in my entrepreneurial journey convinces me to the contrary. I know that people obviously don't pay for transactions, etc., because somebody else is paying, and it's, as I said, it's serving a very different need. But I think people actually trust you more when they are paying for a good quality product. And I think we did not have that conviction to start with because we probably didn't give it enough thought. But if I had to do it again, I would put that filter much earlier.
Interesting. What are the big learnings?
Because if you're useless, you're useless. Like if you don't want to change your life,
yeah.
I'm not a saint. I don't want to change the lives of people who want to live in their hell.
Yeah.
But in a country of 1 billion people, if you build a well-designed product that actually helps people,
yeah,
there will definitely be that many people who want to take charge of their money and change their own financial lives. I am now very convinced about that.
Yeah, 100%. If you're going to pay 1% to your mutual fund guy, then you might as
well. Exactly. And you don't even know that, right?
Yeah, you might. People, even if they know, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care.
Itna to mehnat kar
rahe hain. The only thing is, yahan pe aapko upfront dena padta hai na. To matlab financial services mein na, unko aadat hai ki meri peeche se jeb kaat ke le jao.
Correct.
Mujhe nahi farak padta hai.
Yeah, you make me a
profit. Aage se mere se 50% mat lo.
That is so true.
Ye habit hai. तो आपने बोला ना हैबिट चेंज करना मुश्किल है तो आई अग्री विथ यू कि हैबिट चेंज सो द फंडामेंटली बिटवीन चैत्रा आदिति एंड मी द रीजन वी वेंट आफ्टर वीमेन वाज एज आई सेड वी आर नॉट फिलैंथ्रोपिक पीपल I don't believe in helping people who want to die in their hell. The reason we went after women is because women's habits have not been spoiled by this existing system of selling. So we said, if we can get to this customer, who is anyway not happy, bahar khada hai, fence ke bahar khada hoke soch raha hai, kare ya na kare. To usko kuch naya do, to shayad wo try karega, hai na? Jabki jiski to aadat hi kharab hai, to usko fir kyun karna hai? So that was the idea of going after women as a cohort, because we felt there was a need. We felt they were, you know, they were not biting and maybe something well designed. And that theory got proved. That theory that if you give them a well-designed product, they will... Now, the theory that we should have tested before we tested scale was that, will they pay? At least that's my personal view at this point of time, having, you know, gone through this. So, yeah.
That's a very interesting point of view, which is people should pay for a service which creates value, even if it is upfront. How was it at Paytm? How was Vijay to work with? How was... You were there at a time when things were like, really like, you know, post-demonetization?
I was there during demonetization.
Ah, so this was a crazy time, yeah, right? It was a crazy time. In fact, you know what? I think I've seen you there in the Paytm office. This seems like such a long time ago. We thought
ki
hum log na subscription pe na blades bechenge.
Yeah.
Ye mereko bahut deep conviction tha ki subscription pe
blades bechenge. Kyunki repeat use product.
Or customer has to pay automatically. So I went to Paytm. Thankfully, at that time, there was a McKinsey team serving Paytm. And, you know,
Alok, na?
Alok, Tosha and these guys. Okay? And through them, I got contact to the guy and I told him, dekho boss, Paytm wallet pe na automatic mereko subscription, agar customer website pe bol raha hai ki mereko is date pe ye chahiye, I want automatic subscription. Nahi, nahi, OTP chahiye. I said, bina OTP ke chahiye. So we kind of did all of that integration. And it happened. Subscriptions did not take off, but I used to be in the Paytm office very frequently in that period.
Okay.
How was it to be at a company kind of innovating with a founder so out there, and, you know, kind of, frankly, Vijay, for all his, you know, for all his public persona, I think knows his business like the back of his hand.
He's amazing, actually, in many ways. So I'll tell you what.
Did that shape your entrepreneurial journey in a way?
I think so, very much. I'll tell you what, when I went to meet Vijay, I had no idea that I was joining Paytm, okay? Because I had barely walked out of being a regulator, which is a very different kettle of fish. And I had walked into consulting, so I'll just focus on that a little bit, because when I walked into consulting from being a regulator and being a BankM, you know, head of compliance, so very procedural job, important job, but very procedural and
very different DNA from Paytm, frankly, like very different.
And then I go to, and also you're building upon your strength, right? I already know regulation. So I'm now telling you something. So there's nothing new for me. Yeah. And that's why I got bored, and that's why I got into consulting. But when I got into consulting, it was a very interesting, that actually I think was a turning point for me, because I didn't do well in my first year at all, because people who hired me with an expectation.
Where were you working?
PwC,
okay.
I was there for 5 years.
Okay.
So I was hired with an expectation that because I came with this deep regulatory expertise, I would be able to help all partners on there, because it was a time of deep regulatory disturbance, right? So I've had a very interesting life, okay, career-wise. These things only make sense in retrospect.
But of course.
My first job was as a journalist in Times of India, okay? And it was at a time when I came to do a journalism program here at in Delhi, and Dhirubhai Ambani started a newspaper in that year, and they poached a lot of people from Times of India. So what they did with us, with some of us, as the top of the class, they gave us jobs instead of giving us the diploma. And they straight away hired us. And so I got hired, like, without having to pay fees as a journalist. And I learned whatever I had to learn. So that was the unique thing. Then when I wrote the RBI exam, that was the first batch in which they were hiring BA degree wale logon ko. Uske pehle MA walon ko hire karte the. So I got into RBI as a BA without having to do my MA. Ab kuch na kuch special har jagah hota tha. Fir jab hum RBI mein aa gaye, I used to handle FDI in India, which was a big deal, right? 1990 mein I joined. Right at the right time. And then foreign exchange department mein posting ho gayi.
Wow.
So I got to see this whole, you know, shebang of
really.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see a Manmohan Singh kind of.
Oh, it was just so amazing, that vantage point of seeing the economy open up. And I used to handle FDI and royalty payments and technology transfers. So all of this telecom and cars and you know, and I had to learn a lot because obviously hamari technical understanding thi nahi, humko MBA karke to aaye nahi the, hame thoda bahut macroeconomics wagera aata tha. And then I had to sit there and understand how cars are imported, how duty is paid, how Maggie can continue to pay royalty beyond 7 years because of the product versus process patent. And so there was a lot of learning, right? Project offices, all your Enron and Mitsubishi. And
Enron happened in 96.
Yeah. So I was in the FDI. So there was like, and I was in Delhi. So Delhi was the hub of FDI at the time. So Coke and Pepsi and PVR Cinemas. Sab humne kiya. Sabke paas ek chitti hogi jisme mera signature hoga.
Oh wow,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Because that's so what good. I did. I signed people's approval letters for bringing in FDI in tranches. And so I was learning a lot. Like it was a very big sense of learning. And in some senses, I think I was entrepreneurial even then because I was this young person who used to get bored very easily. Huh? So like many artistic people. So ab hum bored ho jate the. So I had this boss who must be a great person to understand people because he called me one day and he said, I'm putting you in this seat in FDI because you should know that these are people coming to your country to do business with their money. Okay. So just make it happen. So I wasn't the person who was getting into like, you know, being very bureaucratic and difficult. I was the person who was getting with the flow and having fun because it was so much fun, right? Yeah. To see so much happening, everything. Media was a big sector at that time. All these NDTV, CNBC, TV18, all of that came at that time. So I was actually enjoying myself a lot. So I had a great time. That was my MBA, sitting in FDI division for four years. 94 to 98, that's what I did.
94 to 98. So this is post-George Fernandez, Manmohan Singh from RBI to finance.
Oh, this was Mr. Narasimha Rao and the peak of liberalization. So peak liberalization, I sit into that.
These all came in that time. Coke, Pepsi, all these guys came.
They all came in that time. 94 to 98 was the time when, a little bit before 94 and all the way down. So I had a great time doing that. Okay. Then, so I think that idea that you could do new things, because it was a new thing for even RBI, right? This whole thing was new. So it kind of became a prerequisite for me ki ek job mein maza tabhi aata hai jab kuch naya ho raha hai, nahi to kya fayda. So wo acha ho gaya. Baad mein jab banking supervision, then I went to US to study. And when I came back, I was in banking supervision. Supervision was great because it's very erudite. It's very show off. You know, I understand capital adequacy. Yeah. I understand 100,000 ratios. And it's all like you have no stakes, right? It's a consulting game.
Yeah.
you have no stake. You're getting into a bank and you are, unless something goes wrong, in which case then of course you have very high stakes. So that was good. And but I left only because of that, because I started to feel that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't my thing. Someday I would retire and I would just be, you know, that's the day I would see reality. So I was like, okay, let's see reality now. So I go to Bank of America, then I go to PwC. In PwC, I don't do well in my first year. And then I have this conversation with the partner who had hired me, senior partner. And he said, it's very easy for you because you can just help us with our cases and our clients and we will just support your revenues. So what is the problem? So I said, because I didn't leave RBI to continue to work on regulation. Because if I loved it so much, I would be there and I would become a deputy governor or whatever, because that's my path. Why would I leave it? I left it because I wanted to do new things. So where's the new thing? And they were very nice. I mean, sometimes you are just lucky. And they were very nice to tell me that you find your new thing. And I found my new thing to be payments, because 2010.
Wow.
So suddenly you realize that there's this new act in the parliament and RBI wants to change all of these things. And obviously I knew all of that, but nobody really knows too much about it. Okay. So then I went ahead and I hired very young people, because also I wasn't sure how long I was going to do that. Yeah. Because I was like, if it doesn't succeed, then I am off. And I've always had that option of going to the US and doing a PhD and becoming a professor, because I am very professorial. So I was like, okay, fine, I will. And I have great rapport with my professors in the US. So I tell myself that, you know, if this thing doesn't work out, I'm just going back because my husband's a professor. I want to be a professor. I can be a writer, whatever, whatever. I'm not doing this. So I hire very young people, like a bunch of people who are just straight out of LSE. And you know, those years were very interesting because UK had just gone off giving visas to students. So very bright kids went to there and then they were not getting jobs. So I hired a bunch of these kids. And they were very young kids, but they were very bright. And so they set up this practice, which I started to call inclusive finance, because Raghuram Rajan was there and he wanted to do so much. License dena hai, pata nahi kya kya karna hai. Toh humne wo bana liya naya business. Aur wo business achha ho gaya.
Wow.
So in addition to that, we were already having global regulatory crisis. So we anyway had these revenue streams of AML and KYC and the regular consulting gigs. So I managed to, then PwC was very nice. They gave me the India head of banking and capital markets role. So that helped me to bring together all these multiple pieces, etc.
That's how I met. Actually setting up a whole practice.
So I set up a practice.
Yeah, along with the government also, yes. In a way.
And that actually helped me. And because I had these inroads into government, into banks, because I came from that background. So it was an entrepreneurial experience, if you may say so, keeping the costs low. Not that anybody made me accountable for the cost, because in these firms, they only watch the top line. But in my own head, I didn't want to hire people who I would feel bad to let go. Yeah. So I would only hire people who I was confident that if I leave, these kids will go back to college. I'll give them I can get them to go to Harvard or wherever they want to go. Some of them actually did. and so I just did that. And that gave me a lot of confidence that I can do new things. So when I met Vijay, I'd already done this. And I understood that space very well because, you know, that's what I was doing. So, but I still didn't meet him with the intention of joining his business at all. I came for a meeting and we ended up talking for a very long time. And we have a lot in common in our background, right? You know, Hindi medium school, and he's much younger. But I was very struck by the fact that, you know, in our generation, if we came from a Hindi medium school and we happened to get lucky to be successful, we took it upon ourselves to look posh and stylish and speak good English and, you know, just like fit in.
Yeah.
And here was this guy, and that was the most striking thing for me about him, because he was so unapologetic about being who he was. And I could see a lot about a new Indian and the new confidence of the new Indian in that interview.
Yeah.
As I went through the day, we spent some 3-4 hours together. And I was seeing that it was a very different world that was unfolding, because I was already, I think, 40 or whatever, close to 40. No, I was more than 40. And so I was seeing a very different world. And so I wanted to be a part of it. It didn't matter to me what I was going to earn or what I was going to do. And so when they made me an offer, I basically took it because it was taking me to places that I don't think I had an opportunity to go to any which way. But I knew the space because I was from a village. I did have I do have uncles and aunts and cousins who come from that excluded world of, higher education or finance. So it was very interesting for me to actually go and build the bank business plan around that India. So, and I think product should be made for people who are like that, who really are unapologetic about being both.
I agree completely.
Yeah. So one of the things I loved about Paytm was the fact that the brand was so amazingly built that it fulfilled that promise that I and my driver could both use a Paytm to transact, both of us feeling the same sense of,
trust.
Affinity, yeah, and trust of that brand, which I thought was a very remarkable thing. I
agree.
Because I could use it for an Uber, but the Uber driver was also using it with the same, Felicity. So it's the same thing with a few other successful apps, because you build a great product and then everybody...
I don't think anyone has done it the way Paytm has, frankly.
Not in India.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was very, very striking. So I liked the product. I liked Vijay as a person because of our common backgrounds and all this thing. And of course, he's very, very sharp, right? In many things, not just the product and product thing, but in many things. But more importantly, I didn't understand most of what he was doing because I didn't come from that world, right? Technology and data. I mean, I understand it in a very intuitive human way, yeah. But not in any other way. Like I couldn't value his business. I couldn't understand it. But what was interesting at the time is that he was thinking very differently about the bank at the time. He was thinking about the bank as a very pivotal thing to the Paytm thing, and therefore, you know, it was a very big opportunity, and I think that is how the governor also at the time was looking at. I mean, it's unfortunate that it turned out to be very different, and but I think it was a very exciting thing for me to be able. Although it was a very short time, I mean, I left in 15 months, and I went back to city for various reasons. You know, it was my own city, my kid was there, and demonetization changed many things in the way we were thinking about money and finance and scale and all of that. I mean, it was a scale which was mind-boggling for me. I don't think I had the intellectual or emotional capacity to deal with that kind of. I mean, if somebody were to tell me today that I need to build salt for 500 million Indians, I could probably think about it, but I don't think that's intuitive to me.
It's also like Paytm was actually built on a, like Uber, for example, is built on a very simple use case. Drop from point A to point B. That's it. If you're a rider, if you're a driver, that's the use case. Paytm was simple, right? I think it started off.
Was, but not now.
No, now it is, right? But at that time, it was a very, very simple use case. And that use case was encapsulated for
And I think
everyone.
That was, and fundamentally, that was the major learning, right? Because Paytm was that simple use case which could just go viral to 500 or even whatever, billion people. But what I was trying to do with the bank was essentially, because to me, finance is always that deeper relationship because it has to be built around that person and their life. And it doesn't have to necessarily be built in the way that banking system builds it, right? Right. Ki tum 20 saal mein naukri karoge, 60 saal mein retire karoge, toh pension fund banalo and all that. But in their own way, in the way that that customer needs that money, it needs to be built around that. So to me, that is a much of a deeper game than a wider game. So that was the thing. And I went to Citi because fundamentally then I felt convinced that, you know, if you have a profitable business, which is generating returns, and if you can now build a technology that can scale that, then what can you do with that? So it was the reverse of the opportunity that I had at Paytm that I was then looking, and it these things just came to me. It's not like I was looking for a job ever in my life. But because it came to me at that point of time, it seemed like, let's do this.
Did you ever like kind of think about MySalt kind of moving in that direction towards NBFC or even AMC or?
I think the problem I want to solve is not of the product at this stage. I think the problem I want to solve is of the solution and distribution and how to change
access.
Selling behavior to buying behavior. I would love to solve that problem if I can.
Yeah.
If I can't solve that, then I don't think it's worth solving. Then I can go and, you know, write my book.
But are you going to come back to Salt? Is it something that is kind of...
We've decided to... We took a step back because various things, you know, my mother's health... lack of money. My partners also had other things to pursue for now.
Well, are they kind of going and doing their own thing?
No. We are waiting to get back and make a decision jointly. What decision we will make, we will know. But no, right now we are on a break. Literally. On a break to come back and decide that. But there's an opportunity. I mean, whether we do this or somebody else does it, but there is an opportunity to do.
It's amazing to see, like for someone as successful as you, having played so many roles in so many companies, you know, kind of being an operator, regulator, consultant, you know, P&L owner, etc., to come and start up in a space at a time like COVID. You speak with a ton of maturity, which frankly I wish there was more of in the founder ecosystem, right? People don't take the time to step back and reflect on things that frankly were maybe may have been out of their control or may have been very difficult for anyone to see. But that maturity and that readiness to step back and see and kind of take some time and see what if there is a pivot, if there is a re-strategizing, that maturity more founders had. I think that's a learning for many people watching, that it's important. Otherwise, there's no point, you know, kind of pushing the pedal on a road that you know might be the wrong one.
Yeah, but you know, there is such a premium to activity versus inactivity, particularly in our culture.
Agree fully.
That you're one of those people who said people should work 24 hours, no?
No, I did not say that. I did not say that at all. मैंने एक तो 24 घंटा नहीं बोला था
थैंक यू फॉर बीइंग सो काइंड टू पीपल
मैंने 18 घंटे बोला था और मैंने ये बोला था एंड आई रिकॉग्नाइज दैट इशू, बट मैंने ये बोला था कि 22 से 27 साल की उम्र में अगर तुम्हारे पास ब्रॉडली लाइफ कंफर्टेबल है, तुम्हारे बच्चे नहीं हैं, तुम माँ बाप के साथ रह रहे हो, तुम्हारा रेंटल लोड नहीं है, तुम्हारा योर पेरेंट्स आर हेल्दी एंड यंगर इन लाइफ, यू जनरली हैव लेसर कॉम्प्लेक्सिटीज एंड मोर एनर्जी फिजिकली एंड मेंटली बोथ. तो तब तुम अगर इन्वेस्ट करो अपने करियर में, अपने स्किल सेट में, तो वो बेसलाइन तुम्हारी जब 27-28 साल की उम्र में तुम हो जाओगे, योर बेसलाइन कंपाउंड्स वेरी डिफरेंटली एज अपोज टू व्हाइलिंग अवे टाइम फ्रॉम 22 to 29 और 22 to 27, आई फॉरगेट व्हाट, एंड वेन योर बेसलाइन बिकम्स लो एंड देन व्हेन यू बिकम इन योर 30s and 40s, योर पेरेंट्स गेट ओल्डर, यू स्टार्ट हैविंग फैमिलीज, यू विल गेट मैरिड, देयर आर यू विल ओन अ होम, EMI हो जाएगा, देयर विल अ मिलियन थिंग्स दैट हैपन टू यू, वेयर फ्रैंकली योर एबिलिटी टू इन्वेस्ट इन योरसेल्फ एक्चुअली बिकम्स लेसर विद टाइम. तो उस टाइम को वेस्ट मत करो, 18 घंटे लगाओ काम में. वो वेरी मेटाफोरिकल थिंग, बट एज इज द केस विद सोशल मीडिया पीपल, एंड आई गेट इट. लाइक माई क्लोजेस्ट फ्रेंड, इन फैक्ट माई क्लोजेस्ट फ्रेंड इज अ म्यूचुअल फंड डिस्ट्रीब्यूटर, ही स्टार्टेड हिज कंपनी आफ्टर स्पेंडिंग मेनी इयर्स इन ICICI दिस एंड दैट, कि बोलता है कि मेरे को भी एंटरप्रेन्योर बनना है तेरी तरह, लेकिन मेरे को फाइनेंशियल प्रोडक्ट्स में, लाइक ही इज समवन इन माई हॉस्टल हु एवरी वन वुड गो एंड कीप देयर प्रेशर, लाइक आई वुड कीप माई एक्स्ट्रा मनी विथ हिम और लाइक अ वॉच विथ हिम बिकॉज ही वॉज वेरी सेफ. तो उसने उसी इक्विटी को अभी, ही इज नाउ बिकम अ वेरी गुड फाइनेंशियल एडवाइजर, वो एग्जाम देता है, सिंसियरली करता है. नाउ ही इज एन AUM ऑफ, डू यू नो अनुज हैज एन AUM ऑफ नाउ 25 crores और 25-30 crores, ही स्टार्टेड अ ईयर एंड हाफ बैक, बढ़िया से सब कुछ करके. तो उसने मेरे को कॉल करके बोला कि यार मेरा जो बॉस था ICICI में, यू नो हाउ बैड ही वॉज एंड हाउ हार्ड आई वर्क, एंड ही वॉज अ रीजन वाई माई बैक गॉट स्क्रूड एंड दिस एंड दैट. तो वेन आई रेड योर पोस्ट, आई फेल्ट that you know you're making me feel like I did not do enough, and I realized it was a middle management toxicity issue as much as it was a general issue, but wo haan, wo tha.
I'm very indulgent towards issues of workplace and work, because I have worked in different types of organizations. Correct. And therefore I realized that our perception of work becomes very cloudy with the culture of the organization in which we work. Fully. Partly also home and societal expectations. Like I was telling you that if you're a boy and you don't wear your shoes in the morning and go somewhere, then you're useless. And if you're a girl and if you haven't had a child till whatever age, then you're useless. So, you know, that kind of begins to drive your, this idea that I will be useful at certain age or not. And so, you know, these are the type of things. And I wonder how we raise boys in particular with this expectation that sab kuch khud se karna hai. Girls also, so many people are so proud of saying humne sab kuch khud se kiya. Usme kya glory hai? Tumne apna time, the most precious resource that you are born with is time. Wo khatam ho gaya to kuch nahi bachne wala hai, to usko tumne trade off kar diya. Hamare paas choice nahi thi. We came from villages. We didn't have a choice. If I wanted a home in Bombay, I had no choice but to, you know, really work hard and get that house. But if my son wants to work in cinema and wants to make the kind of cinema he wants to make, and he can't raise the money for it to start with, he's most welcome to live in my house, and he shouldn't feel apologetic about it, right? But we do make people feel apologetic about a lot of this stuff. So how we define work is a very complicated subject. And that's why I will not get into your 18-hour space. Because when we say 18, you could think I'm being lazy, but I could actually be working, right? At that point of time, my brain may be working. I may be, you know, coming up with something.
I completely agree. I think for me, it's mostly about plurality and skill building.
Yeah.
I think at some point, your biological neuroplasticity goes down. Tum kitna bhi kar lo, 50 saal ke baad, tum guitar nahi seekh paoge jitna tum 15 saal ke umar mein seekh sakte ho, right? Or Excel or any of the tools that you need to be productive at whatever your
choice. There are people who have done it, but it takes an extraordinary.
It's very hard.
Yeah, it takes like physically, it takes more effort.
Your neuroplasticity goes down, everything goes down. So you might as well compound initially. But it's more about not working, but kind of skill building. But I agree with you actually. And you raise an important topic on, and I know that, you know, we've had discussions even before the podcast started about gender and the role of, I just feel like there is, I've actually become increasingly feeling that the world is sexist and no one benefits. Like nobody benefits from it. Like we spoke about objectification and that, you know, sexual objectification of women is such a big thing, but men are violence objects, and we are seeing it happen a lot. We were talking about divorce right now, where it's happening both ways. I think if you see just amicability of it versus misuse on, again, this is a place where I really want to get into the numbers and understand this, because there are activists on either side and, you know, we want to figure out what. But the issue is, it's, the divide is becoming real. And one of the things that someone told me, that if you take 100 young men, and my fundamental issue is this only, right? The way we raise our boys or the way we raise women has been different, and it continues to be different, and it continues to be different in different ways also. So it's not, how have you done it with three? You have 29 and 23 year old boys. You clearly are thoughtful about it. But what do you think about raising young men in India?
Let me start with my husband then, okay? Mm. Because my husband comes from a traditional family, traditional Bihari family with a matriarch and a patriarch, lots of brothers and sisters, big family. I don't think in their family any man ever went into the kitchen. But when I married him, he was more feminist than even I was a feminist. I am a feminist. And I find it very stupid when people say, oh, let me not be a feminist, but. And that's like one of the most stupid statements. But
because the definition has been changed, no?
No, no, there is no such thing as a definition. It's about you being equal in respect, equal in opportunity, okay? And you can define it however you want. But the fact is that you will fight. It's about...
But definitive anchoring is critical, because otherwise you will never...
No, it's not. It's not. It's not.
Because it's big.
See, I'll give you an example. When Simone de Beauvoir talks about feminism, she is placing herself equal to Jean-Paul Sartre or people like that, right? Mm. So she is placing in that context. When I'm talking about feminism, I'm placing myself in the context of saying I need to get respected when I walk into this organization's office. I should be treated as... others. I should be given the same opportunity, same respect, right? So it's that pair. When the girl on TikTok says, I want to be an object, but I want to be respected for it because the dude with pink hair gets respected or disrespected, I don't want it to be different for me, right? She's fighting a real battle. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think that I have a problem with, I don't want to make it a definitive thing. But to your personal point.
When you say the definitive anchoring is equal respect, equal opportunity, fully agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it should always be, right? And
And it's not very hard to get to that point, because even within that, for example, as a woman of privilege now, because, you know, caste, status, money, right? Today, how I think about feminism needs to be a lot more questioning and challenging my own views and my own assertions than it was when I was a 22-year-old girl in Patna with a very... strong views, because I was on the other side of it, right? I needed to fight more and fight a different battle. So today I need to understand, for that girl, what does it really mean? Yeah. What is her struggle? Agreed. So we always have to keep expanding this circle of understanding. And I think some of us stop doing that at some point of time, which is where this ossification begins to happen. But to answer my own experience of how I think I navigated it rightly or wrongly, is because my husband was very clear that in very simple things like, you have longer hours of work and therefore I will wake up earlier and make breakfast.
Yeah.
Very simple translation of,
oh, yeah,
we need to divide homework equally, yeah, right? Similarly, when my younger child was young and my husband took a semester off to take care of him. He was doing his PhD. I came back to India. I joined RBI. I was due for a promotion. I had more responsibility. He took a semester off to come and take care of the child, right? And that's fine. So I think that level of equality is something which I think I kind of learned from him. My boys, very simple things. Look, like in our family, all the men cook. Like everybody cooks. I love to cook. And I love to cook for my family. So if somebody walks into my house at 11 p.m. and my son walks in at midnight and says, I don't feel like ordering anything today, I want to have a pasta, he can go and make his own pasta. But inevitably, I'll go and make my pasta. And my guest will be wondering that this woman, she thinks she's a feminist, and look at her, she's making pasta at midnight for her son. Because love is not against my feminism. My love is not against my feminism.
And also, making a pasta is an adult thing to do.
Yeah,
it's not a man or woman thing.
Do it.
Yeah.
But what would be wrong is if I didn't have the liberty or the emotional, freedom to tell him that
I'm tired
today. I'm tired. Just go do it or order it. So I'm translating it in a very simple way. But I think the idea is not that you shouldn't be... in fact, I used to make fun of my American friends at the time when I was I used to study there. I used to say, you guys have a thermostat in your marriage and you're constantly just watching it. Because you cannot have this... What they say, no, that today I feel like 8, so you come and be 2. And it can't be like that. It's not mathematical. Yeah. Love and relationships are not mathematical. You will have to... Sometimes you will just have a long periods of... not being happy with the other person. Sometimes you'll have, you know, a huge amount of happiness that will compensate for it. Sometimes you'll just like be very bugged with that person. And then there'll be one act of kindness, one act of generosity. And that's not just with your family. That's with a lot of men.
Yeah.
So even in my working space, for example, there are men who I think are often not the most feminist in their views, or they are not so evolved. They haven't bothered to consciously think about it as feminism. But they are capable of tremendous, you know, kindness and maturity when the occasion demands it. Sometimes even more than my women counterparts.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all of us have seen those things. So these are not simple mathematical formulas.
Absolutely.
But obviously, when you raise children, you'll always make mistakes. You're never going to get it right. And you always have to. And my hack to that is that have two children so that you know it wasn't your fault.
They also take care of each other. I feel like raising someone without a sibling is just unfair. No,
so,
also,
yeah,
like, to
so
be honest, I think I fully agree. I think, and I draw parallels to my mom, because my brother and I were like, from the age of 10, 11, 12, you know, when she would come back home with 2 thailas of, let's say, vegetables from the shopping, I'd take the bags from my hand, give me a glass of water, patila, chai lagao, and just do this for anyone who comes home. So making chai as a 12-year-old, you know, setting the table, cleaning up myself, ironing dad's clothes, everything, like jhadu pocha lagana, the maid did not come into the ashes on my job. And frankly, I just feel like, you know, over a period of time, we have found a way to concentrate value added by human adult to the world. We've concentrated to economic calibration only.
Yeah, which I think is a great, you know, segue into the work, the idea of work, right?
Yeah.
The idea of work is very badly screwed.
Fully.
And I think it's just getting worse, and there's something that needs to be done about it. So like in villages, for example, when I go now, or even in our own urban, you know, among our urban poor, it's a very sad thing that they raise their children to go to school and to do nothing else.
Yeah.
And the children come out of school and they're not qualified to get a white collar job. And they are too, they consider themselves, you know, they've not been raised to actually do the hard work on the,
the blue collar grind. Yeah.
And it's not helping. It's just not helping them. So
absolutely. And that's
and
where...
people in the village... Sorry, young kids in the village, I ask them, ye kaun sa ped hai? And they don't know, because it's no more an expectation that if you are growing up on a farm, you should know what the animal sounds like and you should know what the clouds, which clouds will rain, and you should know. These are basic levels of education that we are giving up in favor of some saint, some school, which teaches you something which really doesn't prepare you for anything. But so the idea of education, the idea of work are both not very well, you know, executed for us. At
also understood.
Yeah.
It's not understood at all. Like, I come back to my parents a lot, because that's the only real place where I have a lot of information data, right? It took me a long time to understand that, you know, and my exposure, parental exposure, 80% mom, 20% dad. So dad was not home. So I always assume that he's the one who's working. And what mom is doing...
Yes, so you think that's work.
Yeah,
that's
because that's economic value, right?
Yeah, that's
what mom is doing is not economic value. Yeah. But then I realized, no, one second, hold on. What she did was massive economic value.
Yeah.
But I just found it hard to calibrate it. And as an adult, I've understood it.
Yeah.
So you're right. And I think raising young boys, I have a huge issue. And I tell this to people in the office. Ki tum agar, if I see you ordering Swiggy every day for lunch, iska matlab ye hai ki tum khana nahi bana rahe ho. Tum nahi bana rahe ho. And iska agar... If agar tum khana nahi bana rahe, then it's a problem. It's a huge issue on your health also and on your ability to adult also.
Actually, we are eating.
And then people are like, you're privileged. You're from Gurgaon, you're from Noida, you're from Noida, you don't have time. Nahi hai. Plus, he has 20 other things, you're the founder. I said, haan, you're right. But I did the same thing.
What,
every hour you're doing? But I used to cook in McKinsey. You think, in a job like that.
No, it's anyway, cooking is an extraordinary activity.
Cooking, keeping house clean.
It puts you in touch with your senses. You are smelling something. You're tasting something. You are seeing colors. It is the most beautiful activity. If you are not doing it, you are missing out on something. Your food, the worst abomination of our time is the cloud kitchen. The person who's cooking for you doesn't know who the hell is he cooking for. He has no love in his food. You are eating food that you have no idea what has been put into it.
Believe Shinjini.
Why are you doing this?
You'll not believe the pitch I heard recently.
And then you guys are funding it.
I'm not. I will not do it.
Somebody is.
So, bolta hai, 10 minutes.
Worst thing.
10 minute delivery of food.
Worst thing.
And then the next page was 2 minute cook time, 8 minute delivery time. I'm like, kya khila raha hai bhai? 2 minute cook time, kya khila? What? Now you come back. Dal chalo cooker chada tha, tu khud. That you can't do. No, no, no. We'll keep the purees ready. We'll keep this ready. You're feeding trash, yaar.
It is so sad. And a country like this, which has such amazing food cultures.
Agree.
And we are giving it up all in favor of these.
It takes 20 minutes to make a meal for 3 people. 20 minutes.
My husband had this hilarious thing today because we decided to go for a walk in Nehru Park. And then we came back and we said, okay, we'll go and eat in Sagar Ratna. We'll have a breakfast because old time restaurant, it used to be very good.
Ashok
Pen. No. Ashok Pen. And the food was this. So we ordered a rava idli and it was so dry and so bad. And first I scolded them. I said, where's the ghee? You don't serve rava idli without ghee. So anyway, so then my husband thought I was being unkind. But anyway, so after some time he tasted the idli and it was so bad. He couldn't take more than a bite. So then he comes to the room and he says, I think I have this very, magic realism type of idea that we could throw those idlis and samosas on people and they would start dying. Because they are so bad. Yeah. But seriously, a lot of food that's getting served is... I mean, Delhi, of course, has great food, but a lot of food that we are getting, served through this system of mechanized eating and cooking is...
horrible.
It's just sad.
I really hope that there is...
Yeah, so I think your listeners, I don't know if they'll become entrepreneurs, but if they can go and cook a nice meal in their kitchen tonight, I think they've added to their quality of life and that is a worthwhile objective.
We recently funded a company which makes very healthy atta, very healthy chawal, very protein rich. Usne wo seed ko modify kiya, ye sahi business hai. Because tum khana banaoge, this is important to do. There's whole food in 10 minutes and food in 2 minutes. Oh, rubbish. Yeah. But you're right. I think raising the next generation of men and women to be financially independent the way you're doing it, to be economically and otherwise independent and self-dependent, I think is super important. And Shinjini, I think today has been just phenomenal. So much to learn from you, on entrepreneurship, leadership, ability to kind of take risks, and also just, step back and laugh at, life in an artistic way. Because end of the day, artists are, they see the comedy in everything. Whatever the form of art, right? That's what my mom says. End of the day, the thing about artists is they'll never take things too seriously. Yeah. They'll always have a very different perspective. So this conversation, hopefully for our viewers, is one that kind of gives them that perspective also. And all the best to you for everything that you do. But before we let you go, I know you need to go to Nizamuddin, so I have an eye on the time. Any last words of, wisdom, advice, observation, critique to, let's say, someone who's your younger son's age watching, 23, 24, 25, possibly, in their first job or, studying their master's degree or, wants to start up on their own, thinking of starting up, doesn't have the courage or doesn't have the financial backing or doesn't have something in their life that is holding them back. But what would be your advice to that person watching?
Okay, so a couple of things. One is that, deal with your fears. Because a lot of time what holds you back is fear. Fear could be fear of failure, which is a very common one. Fear could be, other people saying something, etc. So deal with that. Acknowledge it. Don't brush it under the carpet. Don't live with the assumption that you are invincible because you come from a certain background or you've been to a certain school or you have, because it can also work in the reverse. Sometimes you think that I'm made of steel because I came from a poor household, etc. No matter who you are, face your fears and understand them, deal with them. And the second thing that I like to tell young people is that we underestimate the role of relationships relationships and process in our lives. Relationships, no matter what you do, at the end of it, there is a human being. Even in the cloud kitchen, there is some poor soul who's cooking for strangers who he doesn't know. Understand who that person is and, you know, as much as possible, be kind. I think that's very important. It will help you build long-term relationships. Also, define what a relationship actually means. I had somebody help me at a very late stage. So one of my PwC partners said, I said about somebody that I know so-and-so, because I do know a lot of people. And he said, don't ever tell me you know somebody unless you can send a message to that person at 11 p.m. and he will reply. So he just made it very simple and helped me to understand people in my life who I can message at 11 p.m. and they will reply versus people in my life who will not read that message. Yeah. So don't waste your time with relationships that may not help you, but focus, build on the relationships that I think it's not always because it will help you financially or materially, but it is something which is important for you to live and do anything. Whether you're going to be an entrepreneur, whether you're going to work, whatever. And the second thing is process. I think, like we were talking about work, right? Because the nature of work has changed so much, especially with this current new technology and all everything that we have now, the nature of work has changed a lot. And none of us really know where it is going to go. So I think we need to focus on what process works for us. To give you a very simple example, if you were a writer in my grandfather's generation, you would have written with a pen. If you were a writer in my father's generation, you would have written with probably a pen or a typewriter. If you were a writer in my husband's or my generation, you would have written with a word processor or a laptop or a dictaphone or whatever. And I think the next generation, I think they are born writers. They all write without anything. So whatever it is. But there is a process to work, which is important for you to know what works for you. It's not necessarily something that will work for everyone. Some people are late night people, they get more done at late night. Some people are morning people, they get done more at mornings. So don't become somebody else, but know your own process and be productive. That's, I think, very important. And the third thing very important to know in life is know your money. And very, very important. If you don't know your money, you can know everything else, but you may still not do optimize it. And money doesn't really mean, a bank balance, because at every price point, somebody will not be able to afford something and somebody will be able to afford something. So it doesn't matter what the other person has, but what you have, what you want, I think have a good grip on that. So
amazing. I think this was a fabulous conversation. I think this is the first of, I think, a 2 or 3 part series. We'll have you back on this. I do want to discuss the nature of work. I do want to discuss gender more deeply. I have started to read a lot more. We're trying to doing a lot more things on conversations with respect to younger men and the troubles that they're facing. Of course, I think documentation of this is all over the place. But I want to have you back sometime when you're in Delhi. Next time we should set up a shoot as well. But this has been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for being so generous with your time and with your wisdom and everything that you've done.